Russian President Vladimir Putin headlined a rally in Moscow today, exactly 8 years after Russia annexed Crimea. He stood by banners reading, "For a world without Nazism," and defended the Ukraine invasion before a packed stadium.
In the United States this week, President Biden ramped up his rhetoric against Putin, calling him a murderous dictator, a pure thug, and a war criminal. Let's convene our weekly politics roundtable. Eugene Daniels is White House correspondent and playbook co-author for Politico. Hi, Eugene.
Hi there. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, thanks for being here. And Jesse Holland is also with us, weekend host of the Washington Journal on C-SPAN. Jesse, we're glad you're with us as well.
Thanks for having me here.
Okay, Eugene, can we start by talking about Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky? We know this week he spoke to lawmakers in Canada, in Germany, in the U.S. Congress, when he invoked Pearl Harbor and 9/11, and then he addressed President Biden in English.
You are the leader of the nation, of your great nation. I wish you to be the leader of the world. Being the leader of the world means to be the leader of peace.
Now, after that, the White House pledged another $800 million in weapons for Ukraine, but it still refuses a call for a no-fly zone, which could mean direct combat with Russian jets. So, Eugene, is President Biden feeling pressure to do more?
Oh, absolutely. Not only is he feeling pressure from President Zelensky, who in front of Congress asked for a no-fly zone and some other alternatives, because he knows well that the administration is not going to do that at this point. It's something they have been really adamant about, and not just the United States, other NATO countries, right? You've seen the vast majority of NATO countries not in favor of a no-fly zone over Ukraine, because they know just speaking that could give Vladimir Putin even more ammunition, so to speak, to do worse things in Ukraine and to extend whatever this invasion is out to other NATO countries. But he's also feeling pressure from Congress. You have members of Congress, especially on the Republican side, saying they want a humanitarian no-fly zone, which still would possibly require America and NATO to shoot down Russian planes. And his own party is saying that. And so the administration's in a tricky spot, because they want to make sure that they're leading on this. They put together the coalition worldwide to help Ukraine. But at the same time, they want to make sure that this country doesn't have a conflict with Russia.
Let's actually hear President Biden warning that a no-fly zone would escalate this conflict. Here he is last week.
We're showing a strength and we'll never falter. But look, the idea that we're going to send in offensive equipment and have planes and tanks and trains going in with American pilots and American crews, just understand, and don't kid yourself, no matter what you all say, that's called World War III.
Well, a new Yahoo News YouGov poll shows President Biden's approval ratings for his handling of Russia and Ukraine has gone up 5 percentage points since the start of the war, including a 12-point gain among self-described independent voters. Jesse, is the American public with the president on this so far, do you think?
So far, it looks like the American public is with President Biden, especially as he frames it as America does not want World War III. Now, as we're seeing pictures and tweets and posts coming from Ukraine, they're heartbreaking. The stories that are coming of the war going on in Ukraine is just completely heartbreaking, and many American citizens feel horrible about what's going on. However, no one that I have talked to said they're willing to go to war with Russia with a possible nuclear exchange over Ukraine. And I think that's what you see those numbers coming from. Many Americans, our hearts are breaking for Ukraine, but nobody wants a war between two nuclear superpowers, which is what I think President Biden keeps emphasizing. We will help Ukraine as we can, but we don't want to be at war with a nuclear superpower. So I think that's where you see those numbers coming from.
Mm-hmm. Well, many conservatives in Washington are slamming the administration for holding back in their view. Here's Republican Congressman Steve Scalise speaking after the Zelensky speech, and he thinks the U.S. should help send fighter jets to Ukraine.
The longer President Biden waits trying to figure out excuses to not offend Putin, it's costing lives in Ukraine. He's got to make that happen. It's a plea Zelensky continued to make, as well as a plea for other things that I think the American people want to do to give them the tools that they need to defend their country.
Now, at the same time, many Republicans voted against the $1.5 trillion spending bill last week that had more money for aid to Ukraine. So, Eugene, are Republicans trying to have it both ways?
Absolutely. You know, the party that's not in power in the White House, it's easy to Monday quarterback, right? To say what should happen, what the administration should do. This happened during the Trump years with Democrats. It's what's really interesting here is one of the reasons that President Donald Trump, then President Donald Trump, was impeached was the first time was because of his conversation with Zelensky about aid just like this in order to protect itself. And so Republicans now are trying to have it both ways. That is politics, because they also know, you know, the vast majority of them are not calling for a no-fly zone. And the Defense Department just last week on a call with reporters, when we asked, why are you guys not sending more jets? What is happening with the aircraft? They said that, and they made it clear they weren't making a judgment on Ukraine, but that Ukraine has a lot of jets that they aren't currently using. And so it's not like they don't have what they need. And that is something this administration has continued to push, that they have a lot of those things, that some of the things that they're asking for. But moving forward, that's the Republicans are going to continue to push to President Biden to do more, especially on the military front. Mm.
Well, let's turn now to the Supreme Court for a moment, because next week the Senate will begin confirmation hearings for Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson to fill the Supreme Court vacancy left by retiring Justice Stephen Breyer. And some Republicans have hinted at their lines of attack. Missouri Senator Josh Hawley tweeted, for example, that, quote, her record endangers children. He says that on the district court in Washington, she sentenced child pornography offenders to prison sentences below what federal sentencing guidelines recommended. The White House shot back, said that in overwhelming majority of cases involving sex crimes, Judge Jackson imposed sentences that were consistent or above the recommendations. Others, you know, called Hawley's comments outrageous. Jesse, Republicans are struggling a little bit to come up with a good line of attack here.
Exactly, because keep in mind, she was already confirmed as a district court judge by the Senate in the last few years. So if they had any huge problems with her, it would have come up, it would have come up back then. This is, of course, a Supreme Court nomination, and they're going to try to find something they can use against her. But if she parries their questions, answers them, stays out of any quicksand with any major hot button social issues, I think there's going to be really hard for them to score any major points against her. She's getting coached by the White House, and I'm sure they're telling her, smile at the Senate, answer their questions, don't get yourself in any trouble, and you'll be fine.
Eugene, do you think this nomination is at any real risk, or is this the predictable posturing? I'd read, you know, one of the strategies of the Republicans was maybe just to prevent a Democratic bump after these confirmation hearings.
Yeah, I think that's right. Democrats feel very strongly, the White House feels very strongly, they have the numbers on the Democratic side to make this go through, even if Republicans aren't on her side. Most of the Republicans she's met with afterward, including the minority leader of the Senate, Mitch McConnell, haven't really had terrible things to say about her, haven't said they won't vote for her. That obviously can and will change as we move forward through those hearings. But a lot of this is posturing. A lot of this is, like, as you said, if they vote against it, trying to find ways to make sure that President Biden going into these midterms doesn't get any bumps as we move forward. As you said, he's gotten a little bit of bump because of his handling of Ukraine, and that the midterms will be people looking at how President Biden is doing, how they feel about the country, and then voting for the midterm. So Ketanji Brown Jackson is probably going to be on the Supreme Court. And something that has been brought up to me by some White House aides that they're also interested in is that, hey, if she only gets 50 votes from Democrats, then the first woman of color to be vice president in this country will get to hit that deciding vote. So they will also get a really nice, beautiful picture there, as it were. And, you know, in politics, images, a lot of it. And so that's something that they're kind of looking forward to, though they want her to have a lot of votes.
Well, Eugene Daniels, White House correspondent and playbook co-author for Politico. We've also been speaking with Jesse Holland, weekend host of the Washington Journal on C-SPAN. Many thanks to both of you for your insights. Terrific.
Thank you so much.
Thanks to both of you and have a great weekend.